Accession number 30631, Mr. Herbert Landberg, Real 2. Now, you were going to the university at Sorbonne occasionally, but you also now began to work. Tell me about the jobs you had. What sort of jobs could you get in?
Well, the first job was a strange one. I don't know how I got it. As I had my bicycle with me, I had to go to chemists and collect photographs for development, as you have nowadays, except that people go around in cars. And I had to take it to a laboratory, and then a few days after they've been developed, take them back to the various shops, not all chemists, some other sweet shops also had this facility. And of course, the traffic was fantastic in Paris.
You were cycling, were you?
And I was cycling all the time. Had to get used to cycling on the other side of the road, of course, to start with. And one day, one of my addresses I had to go to was on top of a hill, and it was very steep. And I had been there before pushing the bike, so this time I was hanging on to a French bus, single decker, and they have a sort of outside metal bars around it, and I was hanging on to that. And when I got to the top, there was a flick, a French policeman standing there. Oh, j'attends, I was waiting for you. Je t'ai vu depuis longtemps. I've seen you a long time. You're doing this now. What are you doing? And he must have not realized that I was a foreigner, because my French had improved tremendously then. Had he realized I was a foreigner, he would have asked me for my permis de travail, for my work permit. So I realized that was a stupid thing to do, you know, something like this. And I looked for different type of work, and I worked in a Hungarian restaurant.
What were you doing there?
Washing up, kitchen work, badly paid, and they were the only improvement I thought was they offered me a bed there so I could stay the night, but that meant also that I had to work very late hours. And my relatives, you know, I'd been to them once or twice, offered me a room on top of the high-rise block of flats where they lived in quite a nice district in Paris, Rue de Laos.
You were still at the barracks, were you, generally, normally?
Yeah. Yes.
So they offered you a room. Did you take it?
And I took it. It was a lumber room, and it was full of cases, suitcases and boxes, and I had to make my bed on there as best as I could. And, of course, my aunt was not particularly helpful with food. But I was very lucky. A young boy, Henri Berger, befriended me, and his mother was working as a kitchen maid for one of the families further down, and he kept me alive by bringing me scraps of food regularly, and I stayed friendly with him for years. In fact, the family came here when we moved here to England. To repay them for having kept me going.
Now, what about your family? Were you in touch with your family in Germany, and what was happening to them in 33 to 35?
Well,
you were in France for 2 years, weren't you? 33 to 35.
Yes.
What was happening?
My father was very ill. I think he had heart trouble, aggravated by the loss of his business and
the stress
generally. My mother kept the family going, my sister and him, and they still stayed in a little flat in Fokkerstrasse in Leipzig. And
did they own the flat?
Then I was able to write to her and said, have you got enough money just to come to Paris and see me there? And she managed somehow to get an return ticket with so many days. And as my father was in the First World War and he had the pictures to show, they allowed her to do that, to go to France and come back in a week's time. And she stayed with her brother, you know, that he had emigrated to France in 1913, had married a French woman, but before that he had been interned for that war, 1914-18 war, was interned. And then after 18 he married this French woman. And they had three children, Pierre, Jacqueline, and Eliane. And she went back to Germany, but she said, we can't stay there. This is going to be terrible for Jews in Germany. And
How long did your mother visit for? How long did your mother visit for?
She only stayed, was allowed to stay a week. And then one day I was arrested by the French police.
Now why? What had caused that?
Because I'd been denounced by a concierge that I was working and I was a foreigner, and they arrested me and I got what is called a refus de séjour, refusal to stay, but they couldn't send me back to Germany because they still had this right of asylum.
Now, why were you refused? Because you were going to the Sorbonne. Was it because you weren't allowed to work?
Yes. Oh, by that time, I didn't go to Sorbonne anymore. I just had little jobs, working on first of all that photographer, you know, that photo.
So, how long had you been at the university before you gave up?
Oh, 18 months. And then after that, before the 2 years were up, I only stayed in France for 2 years, from 31 to 30, from 33 to 35.
So what did this mean? You've been arrested. When would you have to leave by?
And I was given a month to get out of France. And I had heard through my mother that an uncle of mine from Hamburg had got his family to England, and would I write to them, gave me the address in Golders Green. And he said, yes, I can write you a letter saying that you can stay with us and you'll be able to get a visa to come to England. And that was now, it's 1935.
So you got a visa?
I got a visa. And but only a visitor's visa. And I said goodbye to all my friends in France and took a train and a ship to New Haven and from there to Golders Green. And the immigration officer was not all that keen to for some reason, there was a flaw in that visitor's permit somehow. I didn't see what it was. But anyway, he said, all right, but be sure that you get out at the end of this month's visitor's permit. And I went to stay with them, with these relations of mine. And
now, whereabouts in Golders Green was it?
Golders Green, and I used to go round with him. He was selling Czechoslovak costume jewelry. It wasn't really jewelry, beads and things like that made in Czechoslovakia.
Costume jewelry, I think they call it. Yeah.
And I had to carry his sample cases around with him.
And this was an uncle, was it?
An uncle. And I didn't get on with my aunt very well, but my uncle was quite useful and helpful, because we realized he was quite an elderly man. It was his second marriage. And so...
How did you like selling costume jewellery?
Yes. And...
How did the selling go? I mean, were you good at selling things?
Yes. So one day I was walking along Fleet Street. I had a day off for some reason or other, along Fleet Street, and it's in that story there. And there was a chap walking in front of me for some strange reason. I realized I'd seen a man with a handicap like this. He had a stick, and he walked in a peculiar way. I thought, that's funny, I've seen a chap like this last time. It was my in Leipzig, my professor of Roman law, Goldschmidt. I said, he couldn't be in London, but surely not. So I drew level with him and looked at him. I said, good heavens, Professor Goldschmidt. And of course, he didn't know me from Adam, because... with so many students there, he doesn't know any, except when they come in for private or seminar or something like this. And he said, let's go to Lion's Corner House and have a chat. In fact, I asked him, as I said in the story there, asked him, whatever made you come to London? Are you working here? Well, let's go to Lion's Corner House. I could ask you the same question. What made you come to London? He said. Anyway, it came out that he was working for quite a well-known English solicitor firm called Nathan Oppenheimer Van Dyke, quite well-known firm, as I realized afterwards. I didn't know at the time. And I told him I was looking for work. Something better than what I had. And he said, what can you do? I said, well, I can teach French now. My French was pretty good after 2 years living there hard. German, Latin, and math. Well, are you good with kids? I said, well, I'm not very strict enough with some of the kids I've been looking after or have been teaching. Well, he said, I might be able to help you, because one of our clients, he's a squadron leader from the last war, Brackley, is looking for a tutor, but he has to be strict with his three kids. And the rest of the story is in there.
No, they can't see that, remember. If you tell us what happened...
And so he arranged an interview with Mrs. Brackley, who was his squadron leader's wife.
Now, it's his squadron leader, Brackley.
Brackley.
You don't know his first name, do you?
Yes, Herbert.
Herbert Brackley.
Yes, he had two names. One of them was Herbert. And
so how did the interview go?
And the lawyers arranged for me to see his wife in a very posh area, Lounge Square, you know, near Knightsbridge, near Harrods. And she gave me a very strenuous interview, asking me all sorts of questions. Anyway, I got a job. And that was a turning point in my life, because the grandfather of these kids, a chap called Sir Robert Mond, fellow of Royal Society, I met him, and then occasionally had to help at dinner parties that Mrs. Brackley gave. And I met Lord Reading, another relations of them, a Jewish family, Reading, Lord Reading for some, anyway.
So what was like, where did you live with the Brackley family as private tutor?
No, I didn't. I just went there a tourist to the house in Lowndes Square, and then she explained they had a house in Norfolk in Blakeney, and long school holidays. They needed me there to stay there as well, and to take them swimming and take them out and look after them and teach them, of course, and coach them so that when they went back, they went to small public schools. The boy Felsted Public School and the girl went to James Allen Girls' School, Jack's, quite a famous school. I didn't realize at the school at the time they were famous, but later on I realized that.
Now, how did you get on with these kids?
Very well. In fact, one day we had to go to Morocco where Sir Robert Mond, who was a chemist by profession, he was actually excavating Roman relics, and I had to take them over on a ship. And at 3 a.m, I was in a cabin of my own, and these 3 kids were in a cabin, different one. And it was all Dutch ships and people of Dutch colonies, Javanese, tiny little sailors, but very strong people, very powerful. And one of them explained to me that one of the boys I was looking for was sitting on the railings and was threatening them if they came near him, he would jump in the water. And can I get him off the railings? It's 3 a.m. So I said, well, then stay back here and let me have a talk. So I talked to him for about half an hour, John Brackley, and he, in the end he came down and all was well. We stayed with Sir Robert Mond in Tipaza, which was an old Roman settlement, Tipaza, in Morocco, in a short while, and then we went back to
England. Did you enjoy it?
Yes, we enjoyed it. He showed us around. We went into caves and showed us some of the things that he had excavated, and it was fascinating, actually, for me. And quite a new type of work on profession that I'd never known the thing about.
Now, you also went on school holidays with them, didn't you? I mean, that was probably a school holiday. But there's a point later on, but you went to France. Can you tell us about that?
Ben?
You went to France with them, didn't you?
Tell us about that, because that
has a later relevance.
They had a house, Sir Robert Mond had a house in Dinard. And for some strange reason, he divorced his wife and married Madame Le Manac, a very local lady of Brittany, you know, where the house was. And she was very nice and made me feel very welcome. And I explained to Sir Robert that I was looking for work. I said, well, brother, Alfred Mond, became later Lord Melchett. He works in a firm called Imperial Chemical Industries, ICI. But I'm interested in a smaller firm called the Mond Nickel Company. I might be able to find you a job there. And true enough, I got an interview with a chap called Lance Cooper, and I started work for the Mond Nickel Company, and I stayed with them for 33 years.
Now, when did you start with them?
I got to England in 35, and I started work for the Mond Nickel Company in 39, few weeks before war broke out.
Now, what were you doing? So you'd stopped being a tutor then?
Oh, yes.
Now, so what were you doing for the Mond Nickel Company? What were you working as?
I was working at general office, and I did just clerical work, nothing special.
And what was the firm doing? What was the firm's profession?
Well, it was a chemical firm, and they had 3 large departments. One called DNR, Development and Research, all scientists. Another one was Sales Department, and this one I was working in was statistical and general office.
Did you enjoy the work?
Yes, I enjoyed it. And it wasn't particularly exciting or interesting, but it was good pay. And what was more important, the Mon family managed to get my father came out on his own, but my sister...
Now, how did he get out? Tell us, when did he get out and how did he get out?
My father came to England in 1938. And my mother was stuck there because she was arranging for the furniture to be sent out. You know, the Nazis, however rotten they were, they allowed certain privileges to people who had been fighting in the First World War and allowed them out. And she came out in 1939 with the furniture in one of these huge, what do you call these?
Containers now. Containers. I don't think they were called containers
and
then.
Yes, it was then called containers too. And it was, the furniture was stuck at Tilbury Docks for months and months until we were able to find a place to live in. My sister came as a skiffy to work for an English family, washing up and looking after the baby and things like that.
So the whole family got out before the war started.
Right.
Now, where were you living? You'd been living in Golders Green. Did you stay in Golders Green?
No, no. I got a job before I started with the Mon Nickel Company through the refugee committee in a furniture firm called Jaegers at Ponder's End.
Was that after you'd been a tutor?
When?
Was that after you'd been tutor?
Yeah. Yes. And so, as it was at Ponder's End, and the nearest larger borough was Edmonton, and so I looked for lodgings there, and I got one in Bridlington Road with a very nice English family, a room just. And I had a little motorbike in those days, an Excelsior 90cc. And I used to go to work on that, and I annoyed the lady of the house because I sometimes brought it into the living room to clean it up, you know, very stupid of me. But they kept me as a lodger.
So you were, how long did you act as a tutor? You can't have been doing the tutoring part very long, 35 to...
Well, after I met... Mrs. The Brackley family, they paid for me to go to Pittman's to improve, to study English commerce, English, and one other subject, Pittman's in Southampton Row. And I went there regularly for my lessons.
So you worked from 1935 to when with Brackley's?
How long for? About 3 years.
So sort of 35 to 38?
38, that's right.
And then you went to the furniture place?
The furniture place.
But not for long?
Through the Jewish refugee committees. Arrangement.
And that was just 38, 39?
Yes.
And then you worked for the chemical firm, 38, 39?
For the nickel firm from 39 till 72.
Till 40 in that first case?
33 years.
Now, so... how did you find England? What did you think of living in England? You'd lived in Germany, you'd lived in France. What did you think of London?
I was very happy. I had made friends wherever I went. Young men about my age. But I didn't keep in touch with the sort of refugees group of people that lived around... Woburn House, you know, WC1. I went, as I told you, I joined the ambulance brigade and I spent some...
So you were well integrated into...
Oh, absolutely.
You didn't so much stay with the Jewish refugees.
No.
And you were in general English society.
Yes, absolutely.
And that was your... You did that deliberately, did you? Or that's just the way you were?
Yes.
Now, so when did you join the St. John's Ambulance Brigade?
I joined...
Was that after the war started or before?
Yes, 2 years before the war started.
Now, why did you join that?
Why? Oh, I wanted to do something in return for having given me and my family shelter. And so I joined them.
Which one did you join? Where were they based? And do you know the number?
In Edmonton, and I got jobs, you know, like the Spurs.
Tell us about the training first. What training did you get from them?
Oh, very good training in situ. You had to go around with experienced people, and then afterwards they would give me perhaps half an hour or so lectures and so on the medical side. And you know what to do, not to do. You know, if a chap was kicked badly, you know, you couldn't diagnose whether he had broken the leg or bruised it. You have to get a doctor and so on. And they issued me with a uniform. You remember, I showed you the picture.
You showed me a picture. Perhaps we'll get a copy of that. It's what colour? It's the dark blue uniform, isn't it? Is it dark blue? What could you describe it? Remember, they can't see the picture. What was the uniform like?
The uniform.
They can't see it, remember?
Oh, I see. It looked like a soldier's uniform.
What colour was it?
Black.
Oh, it was black?
Yeah, and...
It's all right, they can't see it.
No, I just want to show it to you. Yes, I was very proud of that, especially as it looked like a soldier.
And tell me, do you remember anything from you went to Spurs? You said their matches. Tell me, what was it like being a St. John? What was it like in the ground? Do you remember it? When you went to, you said you did duties at the football ground, Spurs.
Oh, yes.
You mentioned Tottenham Hotspur.
Oh, sometimes.
What was it like? What would happen?
Sometimes I was watching, you know, the whole game. Never been asked to help. Sometimes I was asked to go to a room and where someone had been injured and then after diagnosed more or less as an amateur or dilettante, we need a doctor in this case, or arranged for stretcher bearers to take them to an ambulance to arrange it to take them to the nearest hospital, which was North Middlesex Hospital. And the strange thing is, my wife was a nurse at the North Middlesex.
Had you met her then?
Yes.
So when did you meet your wife? Tell us that story.
Well, I lived in that little room at that English family in Bridlington Road, not far from the hospital, not far from Jaeger's, the furniture people. And one day... And at the corner of the street was a garage, and a chap called Hufflet was running it. And he had a daughter who's very nice, and I got very friendly with her. But strange enough, she had to go into hospital, suspected TB. And one day they had a visitor regularly, and one day they had a hospital ball, and Jessica, that's the girl of that garage owner, said, my nurse has got a partner for that ball. Would you like to, have you got a real nice suit to go to a ball, not just to a hop or dance or anything like this? Oh, I said, yes, I've got a what is called a smoking. That means a proper a black suit with the nice black fly and all this. And she said, well, meet her then. And she arranged for me to meet Mary. my wife. And from that we sort of became friendly. Jessica unfortunately died soon, TB in those days. There was not much hope in unless you were sent to Switzerland, you know, to recover. Anyway, it was getting on for 39.